Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Podcast. I'm J.J. Cooper, joined alongside with John Manuel, reporting from the winter meetings in Orlando, Florida. And before we talk to John, I wanted to remind you that the Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by MLB Network, and we have a special offer for our podcast listeners. If you go to baseballamerica.com/MLB Network, you can get the 4-for-4 trial, where you get 4 trial issues for $4. So check that out now, and you can get sign up for that right now, and you'll get to see top 10 prospects as we move on into the National League coming up. So plenty of good content coming up. But right now we have John is reporting from the winter meetings, and from what I understand, relatively cold Orlando, although not as cold as his here in North Carolina. But so what have you thought of the winter meetings up to now, John?
Yeah, so far so good. A lot of productive meetings. We've had a lot of meetings down here, but also I think, just the lobby vibe has been, I think it just started off with a big shot across the bow of Jason Worth and that contract with Philadelphia, with Washington. And that kind of caught everyone off guard. And, since then, you just had a lot of interesting, rumors regarding Cliff Lee, but I think they are earth shaking. And, we did have today, Scott Boras came through and, he was followed. I think it was kind of funny, JJ, Jim Callis and I both smirked watching which reporters were trailing Scott Boras. I'm sure you can guess which one was trailing his little group. But it was the usual suspects, we'll put it that way. But, the Carlos Pena signing happened today. So, it's been a lot of the same that you always get at a winter meetings. A lot of rumors, a few signings. I think the big news, everyone's just waiting on some Cliff Lee or Carl Crawford news. And, there's obviously the two big free agents that are out there, and, everything else is almost window dressing. And of course for us, it's Rule 5 fever.
Yeah. I was going to say, have you caught the fever?
I don't even think cowbell could cure me of the fever, but, tomorrow I'll get my fix. I'll get my Rule 5 fix. We've been trolling the lobby the last couple of nights, with Rule 5 names and, people on their smartphones looking up our preview that we already did, and gathering a couple more names here or there. But I think our first preview, what tends to happen here, is that we'll throw a preview out there. Now, a lot of those names get sent, get bounced back at us in the echo chamber that is the baseball industry. And a lot of people keep secrets as well, and people do keep secrets pretty well in baseball. So some better than others. But, I think they're going to be – go ahead.
I was going to say, that's the interesting thing with this, is that this is one of the cases where we understand, when you're hitting up sources, when you're talking to scouts who've seen guys and all, pretty much what you're going to get is they'll mention to you guys they've seen or guys they've heard are good that their team's not interested in, correct? You're not really going to hear, hey, we saw this, this guy, he's great in the Mexican League and no one knows about him. Well, you're not going to hear that guy. So – we're not going to bat 1,000 on these, on the names of guys going to get picked, but we can get a lot of the rumblings of guys that are out there, and a lot of them are somewhat apparent, correct?
Yeah, I think so. The guys that we put in our preview as the most, even in the magazine when we did when we didn't have the list of official eligible players yet, so we focused our preview really more on what the draft has meant in recent years, and Matt and I discussed on last week's podcast. I thought Matt's preview was, and I've actually had Matt's preview quoted back to me several times this week as well. So that was well received, as it should have been. Matt did a tremendous job on that, as he always does. But he really, the rules and procedures part of the Baseball America prospect blog is Matt's domain. He did a great job with that Rule 5 preview. A lot of the names that we put in there, Eury Rodriguez of the Rays was one of the names we put in there at the start. And I'll be shocked if he doesn't go. I had a scout tell me that there was, he was an 88 to 91, 92 type of guy during the regular season, a lot more 88s than 91 and 92s. But here's a guy who's showing a lot more velocity in winter ball and shorter stints. I heard some 92, 94s on Eury Rodriguez. So he's going to go.
And especially, there's not a whole lot of projection there either, because you're talking about a guy who did have some success at AAA as well.
Right. He started the year in AA and was good, and then moved up to AAA and was very solid. And, maybe this isn't the best way to look at it, but for me, Carlos Monasterio had a last year's draft had some modest success as a middle reliever in Double A, gets Rule 5, and winds up making 13 starts for the Dodgers. So I know Eury Rodriguez is better than that guy, or has a better chance to stick, has a better chance to contribute, has had more success at upper levels, has started, has thrown 150 innings in a regular season. I have more information on Eury Rodriguez, and I think he's a better chance to be a success than Carlos Monasterios was. And Carlos Monasterios was the most successful player out of last winter's Rule 5 draft. So I think the talent pool is a little bit better this year. We always poo-poo it. I think it's a little bit better this year when you have a guy like Eury Rodriguez at the top of it, a guy who's, like you said, there's just not a lot of projection you have to do there. The real question is how much projection is left. You know, how much better will Eury Rodriguez be? Is he just a fifth starter? Even if he's just a fifth starter, I think he's worth it. Hey, when Kevin Correa is getting 2 years guaranteed money from the Pittsburgh Pirates, no offense to Kevin Correa, I think Eury Rodriguez could produce similar big league numbers as Kevin Correa could over the next 2 years for a lot less money.
And that's what's up. That's a lot of what people are looking for in the Rule 5. I mean, there's the huge success stories, the Josh Hamiltons and the Joaquin Sorias, but as much as that, you'll see, like last year we saw, the first guy taken was really taken in part because he would be a major league minimum backup outfielder.
Right. Yeah, that's the Yankees definitely – the Yankees traded a big league piece of their bullpen in Brian Bruni for a reserve, you know, right-handed bat platoon fifth outfielder, Jamie Hoffman. And they wound up finding the same kind of guy in Greg Golson, Art's favorite player from back in the day, Art being our Philadelphia caller who called the office, the toll-free number, and Art takes advantage of that. He used to love him from Greg Golson. But, you know, Jamie Hoffman couldn't even beat out Greg Golson. So, yeah, I think Matt did a great job of detailing that, how the first pick isn't always the best pick. And, you know, talking in the lobby today, got this a lot today when you talk to people about the Rule 5. They said, well, you know, we've got our list together and we'll have those meetings tonight. And another guy told me that really, if you want to see general managers and talk to general managers at the winter meetings, you got to wait in the lobby till about 2:30, 3 o'clock at night. And I stayed up till 2 last night out in the lobby. I could not make it past that. So tonight might be a later night. I might start hitting up the coffee at like 11 or midnight and see how late I can make it and see if I can. I think it's tonight is when some of these pre-Rule 5 draft deals get done or teams make trades to move up. But just looking at Rodriguez as an example, the guy last year had a 380 ERA and 114 double-A innings. He threw 124 innings last year, 142 the year before that, 150 each of the previous two seasons. So this is a guy you have 700 innings of track record on him. And, you know, the last four full seasons, his minimum was 120 innings. So that's a guy who, to me, seems capable and ready of contributing in the big leagues. And to me, that's a good talent for the Rule 5 draft. That's not usually what's available.
Well, so what are a couple of names that you've heard that weren't in our preview? We'll link up the preview. We're going to put the podcast that you're listening to up as kind of the lead on the site as part of our Rule 5 preview. But I think you have a couple of names that you've heard that didn't make it into our preview that we posted up last week, correct?
Yeah, the first big one is Elvin Ramirez. I tweeted Elvin Ramirez's name, but he's probably the strongest rumor after Eury Rodriguez and after Brad Emus, the infielder in the Blue Jays system, whom we also wrote about in the online preview. You know, Brad Emus, just to get him out of the way, he's the closest thing to Dan Uggla in this draft. Everyone keeps saying that same phrase. No one thinks he's going to be Dan Uggla, but no one thought Dan Uggla would be Dan Uggla. But Emus is a second base / third base offensive player. You know, he plays above his tools. Excuse me. He's probably a 40 runner, maybe a 30 runner. Depending on who you talk to, he stole 13 out of 15 bases this year. He did a double A and triple A. So, you know, he's a savvy player. He has some power. You know, I think, again, this is a guy who can help a big league club. Would it be better if he hit left-handed and ran? It would be. He probably would have gotten protected.
But I was going to say, he wouldn't be in the Rule 5 draft.
That's exactly right. So he doesn't fit the third base profile, and he's probably not smooth enough. He's not as smooth defensively as you like at second base. But if you're looking for, I don't think it's a stretch to keep him. And I do think he has the kind of bat that he can, you know, what, could this guy be Ty Wigginton? Could he have that kind of career? It wouldn't shock me if he has a Ty Wigginton kind of career. I think Ty Wigginton's chances of doing that were pretty minute. But Brad Ehmus reminds me a little bit of him. So, but the biggest rumored name right now is Elvin Ramirez. He's the hottest name in the Rule 5, if there is such a thing. 6'3", 208. He's 23 years old out of the Dominican Republic. I've always been an Elvin Ramirez fan because the one year I did the Mets top 30, he was the number 30 prospect. He was at Kingsport that year. I don't have my handbook from that season handy, but he was number 30 coming out of Kingsport, and we wrote about him as being anywhere from 87 to 94 and touching 96 with a fastball and having some awkward mechanics. He was a short strider at the time. I haven't talked to anybody who's remembered his mechanics this year and whether he's LinkedIn to stride out or smooth things out, but I'm looking into Dominican numbers right now, and that's the real big thing with Elvin Ramirez is he's always had stuff. He's always thrown hard. This year in the Florida State League, he didn't throw a ton of strikes. I think it was almost 5 walks per 9 innings. He's throwing strikes in the Dominican League. He's got a 2.18 ERA through 21 innings, 4 walks, 26 strikeouts. Hasn't walked a guy since November 23rd in his last 5-6 outings. He's been heavily scouted in the Dominican. I think the Mets are going to lose Elvin Ramirez. So not quite sure why that happened, why the Mets didn't protect him. It seemed like a guy, you know, he fits the profile, the kind of guy who, you know, gets left off, gets taken in Rule 5, a power-armed Latin pitcher. And the Mets are only at 34 with their 40-man roster. So I'm a little bit surprised that he's out there, but I think it's a good bet that Elvin Ramirez will get drafted. And then,
and he's a guy who has at least the makings of some secondary pitches as well. So he's not just a guy who goes out there and throws hard. You know, he does have breaking ball that at least has a chance to be, from what I understand, potentially down the road an average pitch. So it'll be interesting to see with him. You know, obviously he'd be, I would assume, in a bullpen role now, but he's not just a, you know, reach back and fire away guy.
Right. So, I mean, he's got 4 pitches. You know, I don't know that he throws 4 for strikes. But, you know, the best things about him are that and he does spin a breaking ball. He does have some feel for a changeup. But as I recall, you know, I think I wrote up in rookie ball, they had, you know, at times had some real fade to it, some real depth to it as a changeup, they almost split action. You know, he pitches aggressively, and, you know, one of the things we know, but there's a lot of rough edges with Elvin Ramirez. So, you know, a couple of years ago, Ivan Nova fit the same profile. The Yankees did not protect him. He got Rule 5 by the Padres, but he didn't stick. So getting picked is one thing. Sticking is a whole other kettle of fish. I'm trying to think of other cliches I can throw in there, but, you know, he wasn't exactly dominant.
I was going to say, I do have his number 30 scouting report from the 2008 handbook, so I'll add this as a little bonus cut here. The Mets have signed several promising position players from Latin America since Omar Minaya became general manager, but Diolis Guerra stands out by far as the best of the international pitching signees. New York hopes more depth is on the way, with Ramirez leading a group of young Latin arms that also includes left-hander Angel Calero and right-hander Pedro P. Martinez. Ramirez has a big arm, having hit 96 regularly and sitting anywhere from 87-94 with a short, deceptive arm action. One scout who saw Ramirez at Kingsport said he'd have more velocity if the Mets could lengthen his delivery out front, and club officials said they had success doing that in instructional league. Ramirez has a wiry, strong body that allows him to generate a quick arm that helps produce a hard-breaking ball that's closer to a curveball than a slider. He has a chance to have decent control, but too much effort in his delivery to have much command, making him profile's reliever. New York likely will keep him in the rotation to get more innings in 2008 at either Brooklyn or Savannah. So that's from a couple of years ago, but I think that still somewhat sums up a lot of what is Elvin Ramirez.
Right, and, you know, there's a reason why he wasn't protected, why he wasn't a slam dunk, and that's, you know, the command, 5.5 walks per 9 innings. But he struck out 8.1, you know, this year. There's something there, and he's going to get popped. This is his first year as a full-time reliever in the minor league. They tried starting him the last few years. I'm pretty confident that Elvin Ramirez is going to get popped. Another guy who we're hearing that's going to get popped is Joseph Ortiz. another left-hander. On the preview, I talked about several Latin left-handed pitchers who are all shared the kind of the Johan Santana profile as far as their left-handed Latin low A. I guess just call it the three L's profile. And every year I look for those kind of guys in the preview, and every year those kind of guys do get drafted. Last year was the guy the Royals took from the Braves, who didn't even stick. I can't remember his name.
Edgar Osuna,
who they didn't, the Braves allowed the Royals to keep with no compensation, if I recall correctly. Ortiz is more like Fabio Castro, who was the number one overall pick a few years back. He's a little left-hander with a real good breaking ball. And he put up big numbers this year, but he's listed at 5'7". That's the biggest number for me is, you know, he's Tim Collins size. Who do you think is bigger, Joseph Ortiz or Tim Collins? I had a list at 5'7".
that's an award that they'd be both standing on step stools to try to win.
I'd say you have those two guys and Joe Testa are all going to go back-to-back and see who's biggest. But Ortiz was 4-1, 150 at Hickory, with 59 strikeouts and 5 walks in 42 innings. And when you have a good breaking ball, you're gonna dominate the lower levels. And that's what he did. He went to Bakersfield and, only a couple innings there. So he only threw 44 innings. I was trying to find Ortiz in winter ball, and I hadn't figured out if I'd seen him in winter ball. But apparently it's an 88 to 91 mile an hour fastball and just a hellacious breaking ball at times. And, he's only 20 years old. And he is pitching winter ball in Venezuela, as a matter of fact. And, again, I haven't got a scouting report necessarily. I just see the numbers. And this does not seem to make sense. It's 18 innings and 18 games, 6 2/3 innings. So he's clearly being used in a lefty specialist role in Venezuela for LaGuardia. And he's only he's walked 4, struck out 5. The numbers really don't tell you that much. The numbers that tell you is that 5'7", 80 to 91, big time breaking ball. So this guy would be, if this guy gets taken, it's going to be as a lefty specialist kind of guy. And we've seen those guys stick in recent years. Wesley Wright is an example of a name that the guy that the Astros took from the Dodgers and he stuck. And in fact, talking to an Astros guy in the lobby last night, Wesley Wright's still kind of in that role, kind of an up and down guy, even if they tried to lengthen him out. I think Wesley Wright is well behind other candidates for the Astros to starter spot, like Jordan Lyles and then the veteran Nelson Figueroa. I think they wish that Wesley Wright could come in and seize that role, but I don't think he's going to do that. So, his best year might have been the year they rule 5 him. That might wind up being his career best year in the major league. So, Joseph Ortiz is another name that's been thrown out there as a possibility who wasn't in our earlier preview. And, JJ, one other name, I'm not sure if you stumbled across this one before or not. Was Jason Rice of the Red Sox organization?
Yeah.
Hard throwing power right hander. Yeah, I think that name came up earlier in the week when I was still in Durham last week. That sounds like a guy who just has fits the profile, really big raw arm. Not a guy who's polished yet, but just doesn't command it. But, really aggressive and challenges guys with fastballs. He's 90-94, and at times he's even better than that. So he was in Double-A this year. And, another guy where it wouldn't surprise me, I'd say. But for me, most of the names that we've heard bandied about here in Orlando and before we got here, for the most part, it was pitchers for the Rule 5. And, if you're looking for an Everett Cabrera type in this year's draft, one name that's been thrown out there, I'm not sure I buy it, but Jose Perella of the Yankees, P-I-R-E-L-A. He was part of their same international signing class back in 2006 that included obviously Montero, Jesus Montero, but also Jairo Heredia. I think Perella was one of the top 4. After Montero, there were 3 other guys who got pretty significant bonuses, Heredia, Perella, another guy whose name I can't pronounce. It was like Orelki Lepe or something like that. And all these guys got like $300,000 to $350,000. Perella has moved to second base. He can play a little shortstop. It's a utility infield profile similar to that of Rigi Corona, who's still in the Yankees organization, who was Rule 5 a couple years ago by the Mariners, didn't stick. So it wouldn't shock me to see Perella get gone. But back to Rice, the thing that makes Jason Rice attractive is he's 24, so he's not like he's a finished product. He's a short power arm right-hander. He does throw hard, but he has success at Double A. He has 71 strikeouts in 60 innings, 2.85 ERA. So again, a guy who has had some success at upper levels against legitimate hitters. It's not too much of a stretch to see a guy like Jason Rice helping out in your big league bullpen.
And again, one of the things it comes back to is that what you're essentially doing is taking a $25,000 flyer on a guy like this. So you bring him into spring training, and if he doesn't look good, you haven't really lost much of anything, right?
Right. It's $50,000 up front, and then you can get your $25,000 back if you get the player back. Sometimes the teams don't want the player back. You're stuck with him. So it's really it's a $50,000 flyer in my mind.
Right. Yeah. You would think then that you hopefully would not mind keeping him, if you get to keep him in the organization for 50, if you have any interest of him at all. I was thinking of it as the fact that you're probably going to, if you scout a guy that you like, you probably are going to lose him, you would hope.
Correct.
You lose him back if you can't.
One of the great guys, one of the great stories I heard yesterday from an agent was I definitely have a couple of players who are getting Rule 5 interest. But they're all the kind of guys who, if they get Rule 5, they'll get offered back the first day of spring training, and that was coming from the guy's own agent. So, but you never know. There are always deep cover names, and, people aren't going to tell you their whole prep list, obviously, and guys are looking at, but the day of the draft, tomorrow morning, we'll go in there and there'll be some, it will have shaken out a little bit. We'll know before the draft who the first pick is going to be more than likely. And see what happens with it. But I do expect that there's a chance that organizations that we think of as very good organizations, like the Tampa Bay Rays, we think of them as a really deep farm system, JJ. It wouldn't shock me if they lost two or three players. But it also wouldn't shock me if the Orioles lost a couple of players. I don't think they're going to lose Ryan Adams and Wynn Pelzer and Brandon Waring, all of whom I put in the preview. I'd be shocked, though, if they don't lose Wynn Pelzer. I think I look at this talent pool, and he's one of the better players there. Again, a guy who's been to Double A, has had some success, and has some stuff. I think we're both hoping that Stephen Vogt gets picked. I just want to see him in the big
league. We're both Stephen Vogt fans. There's no doubt about that.
We're definitely Stephen Vogt fans, and it'll be fascinating to see if that guy gets gone. You talk to scouts about him, and it's like, well, he plays catcher. I don't think you can say that he can catch, but he does play catcher. Subtle difference there. But to me, a left-handed bat who could go back there and, be a passable backup catcher, I think he's interesting.
And he's a true 25th guy if he did get picked. I mean, you're talking about a guy, what he would bring is reasonably, he's a rather older guy for a guy who's in high A, but a reasonably polished bat who can play at least and play, not, well, but play multiple positions. He can play some outfield. He can play some corner infield for you. He can play catcher. So, you could see a guy like that possibly sticking as a 25th man. The thing that keeps coming back on this is most of these guys we're talking about are not impact players, but that's, again, why they're in the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, absolutely, the guy who's the best Rule 5 story of the last decade isn't even a guy like Hamilton or a guy like Dan Ugla. And to me, it's Joakim Soria, a guy nobody knew anything about and had made seven outings domestically in domestic leagues before he'd been kind of like farmed out by the Padres to their Mexican League affiliate. And, just great scouting by the Royals. And I heard a story from another club who said, we had this guy turned in pretty good. I had a solid average on him, but we didn't pull the trigger on him. We didn't have a chance to pull the trigger on him. And, they didn't move up to get that guy. So I think I like those kind of stories, the great scouting stories. And I think Joakim Soria is one of the best scouting stories, in the last 10, 20 years, because he's been such an impactful player in Kansas City. You never know, in a different system, a different organization, he might have been made a starter by now with his repertoire. Who knows, this guy could have been an impact starting pitcher And finding that kind of talent in the Rule 5 would have been amazing. But that was the first year of the current rules. I think this year has a much better chance of producing some players who stick and make some impact than the last couple of Rule 5s have. But I still don't think that anyone looks at the Rule 5 and as a way to turn their major league franchise around. That just doesn't happen often enough to expect it to happen in 2010.
Yeah, no, that, and it will definitely be interesting. It's going to be fun to watch. It's kind of a nice little oasis in winter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad. It's a good way for it to it's a good way for the for me for the Rule 5 for the winter meetings to have a nice endpoint. Another thing is that it's a good joke. It's always easy fodder for me to joke with people about the. How I'm working on my Rule 5 preview. Jim Callis was joking with myself and the Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com that we should do a full Rule 5, like a mock Rule 5. And Jim said, complete with, passing on guys, which teams pass, even the teams that aren't at 40 and who they're going to, which ones are going to pass and predict the trades and all that kind of stuff. So, it'll be fun. We're still trying to decide. It depends on our internet connection tomorrow. In the room where they have the Rule 5, whether or not we'll just tweet it. We might just tweet every pick, which if we do that, probably do that at John Manuel BA at my account. And then we can try to retweet those on the Baseball America Twitter account. Or I could just do them at the Baseball America Twitter account. And if we have a good enough connection, I'll live blog it and with commentary, and Matt Eddy will just keep up with each pick. But Matt and I will both be in full Rule 5 mode tomorrow during the draft, which I believe is at 9 a.m. In the morning, Eastern time. And I'm sure we'll have lots of Pacific Coast time, Rule 5 draft nicks who are up at 6. Rule 5 with your morning coffee, what could be better than that? I think a lot of things probably. But we'll wake up Aaron Sid and make Aaron do a post-game podcast with us.
If you would, though, describe for people just what it looks like there as the Rule 5 is going on.
Yeah, the best part, I think, about the Rule 5 room is that what I love about it is that everybody rolls in with their luggage. It's a big room. They get a banquet hall or that kind of thing. 30 tables for all 30 organizations, obviously. And usually a pretty big video screen set up at the front, not so much with highlight the players, but it's like a big TV, and then you can see each pick pops up when it's announced. And there are microphones set up with those tables. So when it's your turn to pick, your organization is supposed to send someone up to the microphone and say, with the first pick of the Rule 5 draft, the Chicago Cubs select Josh Hamilton, and then we're going to trade him to Cincinnati. That's kind of how it works. I don't think it was the first pick, but, you get my drift. I guess it was the third pick that year. But that's what that's kind of how it goes. And it's really set up the way – it's set up the way that you wish the Major League Baseball Rule 4 draft was set up, really. In a room, everybody's in the same room, and then there's actually an audience, because it's everybody else in baseball who's at the meeting still, comes to watch, which is just fascinating to me. There's the tables at the front, and there's a couple media tables set up there after that, because, what else are the media going to do that day? And then there's just the rest of it usually is just chairs or standing room, and people are actually sitting there watching the draft, which is, again, I almost wish they would televise it just to see what it would be like on TV. I would love for MLB Network to show it. I do believe Jim Callis is actually going to be on XM radio afterwards, as he has been every year for the last 4 or 5 years. Well, he will offer commentary about the Rule 5 after it's done. But the first year that XM existed, JJ, they had Jim on there, and they did the Rule 5 live. And expected Jim to have a comment on every single player.
That's not always exactly. Easy right there.
No, it is not. And
when you get out to the double-A portion, that's impossible.
That's right, and that's right. So now Matt Eddy, being the Rule 5 draftnik that he is, I think he's actually going to be more into the double-A and triple-A phases. That's one of the things that is fascinating, is how these teams construct their rosters. And the Mariners are a great example of this. In the Rule 5 preview, we talked about, what's the guy's name? Ramon Morla, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Seattle. He's one of the, Ronnie Morla. No, that's that. I think I was right the first time. Ramon Moreland.
Yeah, I was right the first time.
And he's 21 years old. He hasn't been out of rookie ball. And he's our number six prospect in the Appy League this year. But he's also not. He's so you could major league rule five him and try to take him from Pulaski to the big league, and that road that road is pretty long. Or,
but that's your earth, I think.
But that's your only chance. You either rule five him in the big league level, or you don't at all, because they put him on the AAA Tacoma roster, and that was smart. They did not put him. They put him on their AA roster, which is now the Jackson Generals, and then you could have taken him in the AAA phase and had a nice prospect in the AAA phase for $12,000, and that's a little bit more of a doable, you know, kind of jump. They actually have some interesting players on their AA roster, guys that names you would recognize, like Stephen, and I won't scream it, or Nolan Gallagher, you know, lead singer of Oasis and former Stanford right-hander, one of my favorite Montana natives. So there's some interesting. That's another interesting part to watch. Or like Quentin Berry, I can almost guarantee you, Quentin Berry out of San Diego State, was a Phillies prospect for a little while, and is now in the Padres system. He's been released. He'll probably get taken in the AA phase because the Padres have him and they put him on the Lake Elsinore roster. I mean, that's a guy who it makes sense that you take him as a good organizational player for your AA team. Well, you know, he's had some success, and if you're an organization that's thin, you know, at the AA level. Quentin Berry for $4,000 is a good guy to go out and get in the AA phase. So I'm mildly interested in that part. I believe that Matt Eddy will have a significant minor league Rule 5 analysis on the blog Friday or Saturday or the first of next week
when
it all shakes out.
And I feel confident to say that is the only significant analysis of the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft that you'll find anywhere.
I sure hope so. I really hope so. But I mean, like, you know, Jeffrey Baisley, another guy like that. I mean, there's some older guys who are Kiyagawa. Kiyagawa's on the AA roster for the Yankees. I mean, he's already the all-time career wins leader at Scranton. Why not AAA Rule 5 that guy? He's shown he could be a fine AAA pitcher. So that's going to be interesting to watch. There's another Yankee I meant to mention earlier, Craig Hire, a right-handed pitcher, who threw very well for them in the Arizona Fall League. He could get Rule 5. He's a control guy. When you see he sinks the ball, I think when you see guys like David Herndon, or who was the guy who was in Philadelphia this year who stuck? Was it David Herndon? There were two Angels right-handers who were Rule 5 last year. And one stuck and one didn't. I think it was David Herndon who stuck. Thinker baller. Yeah, it was David Herndon. But a right-handed pitcher who sinks it and keeps the ball in the ballpark, that guy has a chance to be a 12th guy, you know, eat up some innings in the back of a bullpen. And I think that's the kind of guy that Craig Hire could be. So, you know, and David Herndon was on Philadelphia, a playoff team. On their big league roster all year and had a 4.30 ERA, probably a little bit worse than league average. He had a lot of hits, but he got two out ground outs for every air out. That's two home runs allowed. That's what you'd be looking for in Craig Hire. It'd be a 12th guy at a low cost, and that's really the kind of the role the Rule 5 plays right now.
But we will, as you mentioned, we'll be covering the Rule 5 extensively tomorrow, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. We'll have the podcast that you're listening to here. Plus, you can also check out the names that we posted that you posted last week. I believe 25 names, and Matt Eddy's look at the last decade of Rule 5 picks and kind of who's made an impact, who hasn't, and all that. So check that all out, baseballamerica.com. And for John Manuel, I'm JJ Cooper, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks a lot, everybody.